This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Welcome to Baseball Outside the Box. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. We are live here in Vancouver, Canada. We are excited. We had a great clinic, International Sports Group, and BC Baseball, some of the finest baseball people in the world. You've got to check what they do out here in Vancouver. For years, they've been doing a caravan, traveling all over the area, 16 cities in 14 days, training kids, parents, and players. And right now, we've just finished up with a convention of over 200 coaches from the Vancouver Island area. It has been outstanding. Some of the most attentive coaches that we have seen around the world. We got some great instructors. And right now, we are gonna do a Q&A with some of our instructors that are here, some of them fly out early. But on behalf of all of us, we just wanna thank BC Baseball for what a great organization you have. Again, I'm your host, Pete Caliendo, Baseball Outside the Box, and here we go with the live Q&A. We're gonna take some questions from the audience. So right now, let's see, any coaches here have any questions? If you don't, I will ask the first question, which means you won't ask any questions, will you? Any questions? No? All right, here we go. Now, question number one.
Well, hello guys. Great weekend here. I started as assistant coach at 3 years old in Mosquito, which we now have an event. My primary, I guess, reason for being at events like this, trying to go where I can, is really not for the kids. I found that this game, unlike hockey where I kind of grew up playing that, you get hit, you get hurt, you know it. You get hit with the puck, you know it, it hurts. But I found with baseball, these kids can be injured by doing wrong throwing technique and things like that. And I'm just wondering, probably more websites or things like that, because I know that you can teach a kid to throw wrong, and he'll do it for years, and then ultimately 15, it doesn't have an arm. So, more websites maybe towards throwing techniques, that kind of thing.
All right, set of websites. We're going to go to our first coach. And remember, what we're going to do here is if another coach wants to answer quite the same question, we're going to allow that because it'll be fun to listen to a couple different opinions sometimes. Okay, go ahead. Coach Ayers.
Are you asking, how do you tell the difference between stiffness and soreness of a youngster being tired and a youngster being injured?
You explained it quite well, and I took some notes here on that. And again, you said if you warm up and you're still hurt, it's an injury and all that. What I'm saying is accumulative. Like, if you throw wrong, and he's doing it, but it's working. It's not like it's a cumulative thing where his rotator can eventually get injured. You know? Where, like I said, it's not like an impact hurt where you say, okay, my shoulder's hurt now, I'm going to take care of it. But you can be throwing the ball wrong for a week, and you don't know you're doing damage inside of your arm.
Okay, in the outline I gave you is an arm care program, all right, that specifically addresses what you should be doing to loosen up, to warm up, to throw every single day. There's three major sections of it. I'm sure you're capable of reading it. It takes care of arm fitness, how to strengthen and build the arm. One of the other things I strongly suggest, you'll find that the player will be able to identify by putting his finger on the injury if you do an isometric into the wall. You know what I mean by that? Just put your arms out and push into the wall, push into the wall, push into the wall, and hold it. It just lights it up. And they'll say, well, it hurt right here. By the way, front side is mechanics. Backside, injuries are strength. Outside the shoulder is usage. Elbow, you're in bad shape. Better be careful. We're not doctors. We're not orthopedic surgeons. We don't have x-rays, and we don't have scans. Send them to the doctor.
Okay, we're going to go to question number two. Oh, wait, Coach O'Connell wants to answer this one also.
Before we leave the subject, I think also, if you're, do you guys do long toss? How many of your teams out here do long toss every day? Well, part of that long toss program, sure, your proper throwing technique, and there's a lot of ways to do that. Alan Jager's got a great video about long toss and the way he breaks it down so that when you start throwing, you're all throwing the same way every day. And if you do long toss every day, you start with the same approach every single day, and your coaches are walking around, or your volunteer people, I know that, but you also have parents who can help out, and you teach them where their arm is supposed to be at a certain point in that throwing motion, and they're walking around as the kids are warming up and doing their basic long toss. You'll see problems before too long, and you'll correct them right there in that basic long toss every single day. And to teach that proper throwing technique is very important. The first thing every day, if you're going to throw, and also kids better be warmed up before they throw. Too many kids start throwing and they use that as a warm up. You warm up before you throw. And Joe did some great things about warm up yesterday, and that's very important to have that kind of stuff going. But I think long toss would cure a lot of these difficulties with the technique if you do it every single day the same way.
I can see there's a couple of coaches. Let's go to all the coaches. They all want to answer this.
If you're looking for a website or for information, Tom House has done the most research in this, and he's done it for 30 years. The National Pitching Association, NPA.org.com, is one of those, has the best, in terms of mechanical information, it's got the best stuff. There are a few websites that have teachers that work all that, including one guy in Texas and some other people. But Tom's information in terms of the biomechanics of it all are by far the best of anything out there.
And Joe Germain, the final instructor.
So great answer so far. Again, with the long toss, your body will naturally find the perfect mechanics for you at that stage in development, because that's how you have to throw it to get the farthest throw you can. So if that kid is throwing the ball as far as possible, that is his mechanics, regardless of what you think as a coach it should be. Because if he can throw it hard and far, that's his thing. One thing you can look at is YTLWs for scapular traction, and then Job's and 90-90 exercises for the rotator cuff. And then after that, just doing athletic movements like I talked about yesterday. If you understand your body, running in different directions and throwing, doing different drills, mixing it up all the time, the more you understand your body, the less likely you are to get injured.
And for our audience on Baseball Outside the Box, I want to mention Pete Wilkinson, Tom O'Connell, Terry Ayers, and Joe Germain are the instructors. Second question.
Thanks, guys, for a great weekend. One of the discussions we have that repeatedly comes up is about the age where kids should be pitching in a game. And I understand there are some kids who are 9, 10, in that developmental stage of their life, who can pitch the ball. But when you look at a team of 12 kids, how many of those kids are going to be a good enough pitcher to keep the other 12 kids in the other team, plus the remaining kids on their team, engaged in the game? Because we see such a drop-off because kids lose interest.
Great question, and we're going to use all the coaches on this because it's an important topic. Who wants to start off? Joe, got it? Start up.
So you got to practice it before you ever get on the mound. If you haven't practiced it, then it's not going to happen in the game. But that being said, don't focus on pitching. Use your warm-up. You can include some pitching mechanical throwing drills, but do the athleticism stuff.
Kids pitch too much. They don't quite catch enough. Teach catching, throwing, okay? The mechanics of pitching are the same mechanics as throwing. One of the big keys to throwing strikes is the glove side. And I hate to get too technical, but it's the key is squeeze the glove, swivel the elbow. The elbow comes real close or in on the rib cage. Your pecs travel to the glove. Pecs to glove. Youngsters get this right away. Your glove is the biggest, juiciest burger you've ever had in your life. Take a bite out of it. When you throw, your glove should be here. Just a second. It's the sights of a gun. Okay, it's the sights of the gun. Command is taught by the glove. Technically, we have a cone of release. Okay, two vector points here and here. The closer these come together, the sooner the vector lines come together, the more strikes you throw. The further apart they get, the more balls you throw. So stay tight, stay inside. Does that make sense to you guys? I know we haven't talked about it at all. Gentlemen, I gave about 183 slides of slow motion breakdown of pitching technique that shows what happens in 3 seconds. The whole thing, so it's really complex.
And folks, we're going to do our best because we'll be getting the emails or we'll be forwarding the information to BC Baseball again. We're here in Vancouver, Canada for the Coaches Conference. We'll forward that to BC Baseball. They'll get it all the coaches so you have more information to take a look at. Next coach, Tom O'Connell.
I just want to reiterate that everybody on the team, it's throwing, it's not pitching. And if you teach proper throwing and you throw enough, you're going to develop. You'll be able to see which of those players is going to be your pitchers, which of those, because there's a little bit of a different, I think it's mentality more than anything else, mentality and attitude that make a kid a competitive pitcher rather than just a throw. But all throwing is the same, just little different release points. Shortstops, infielders do the same thing, but they just do it in a shorter vector, maybe, I don't know what that is.
Well, yeah.
Time frame is shorter too, but it's throwing that's important.
Pete Wilkinson.
To answer your question about who should pitch, I would give everybody on the team some basic instruction in it because it's good for them. It's good for them in terms of their self-esteem, it's good for them in terms of their throwing action because there's feedback, because the targets are smaller. I think everybody should get a shot at it and scrimmage them before you put them in a game with the uniform on. But why not? It's not inherently dangerous unless you're stupid about it. And smart about it means prepare for it and then minimize the number of competitive throws off the mat.
All right, we're going on to the next question.
Thanks, guys. I think my question is, when I grew up, went through, we didn't have pitch count, stuff like that, that is implemented in recent years. And one of the things I observed was the guys that pitched up to 12 didn't pitch when they were 16, 17, 18. And it was the guys that started picking up the pitching at 13, 14 that were pitching in college, moved on. And I think a lot of it's due to strength and stuff, but from your perspectives, you guys have been in the ball for over 50 years. How do you see that going, especially with the implementation? Or do you even observe that when they come into the high schools and say, did you pitch when you were 12? Or did you not? When did you pick up pitching? You know, like the question I'm just trying to see is, you want to limit the guys, you also want to win, but you also don't want to blow a kid that you can see he's got talent at 12 pitching. So he can pitch when he's 20. And most of the times, of course, it's all of us coaches, we want to win, so let's throw that kid in and give him an extra few more, and we won't give him the rest that he should get.
You should come around the world with us. Just say that. Don't ask him a question for him. I'll do the first part of this, and then I'll have some things to chime in. I was one of those kids who pitched in the Little League, and by the time I got to high school, I wasn't pitching anymore unless somebody needed a tournament final someplace. In Little League, typically the best athletes can pitch. He's usually also playing shortstop. And the really good athlete goes on to play shortstop because hitting is a whole lot harder than pitching. And not in terms of obviously injuries, but it's harder to do. So the great athlete will tend to gravitate in that direction. But you have to be athletic to pitch in the long run. But you're right, a 13, 14, 15-year-old pitcher is going to tend to be the pitcher later on. But that's that's just the natural evolution of throwers who are athletes versus throwers who have throwing as a bigger skill than their athleticism. There are exceptions to that rule on both sides, but typically that's what happens in my view.
Who wants to tackle it? Tom O'Connell? No? Terry Ayers? Joe Germain? We're just going down the road.
Biological versus chronological age. The younger player that was more physically prominent than the other kids, he was the pitcher because he could throw way harder. And then nobody ever told him how to get better. So by the time he got to 13 or 14, he'd done the same thing his entire life because nobody ever thought it was important to teach him. They focused on the guys that weren't there yet, so they developed better mechanics, they had more coaching, and they had just different experiences. Also, when the guy at 13 and 14, he doesn't throw as hard anymore, he starts getting ripped because of that lack of development, and he doesn't want to pitch. That's another way to look at it.
10 years?
Windows of trainability. Up until puberty, you're only developing axon nerve fiber endings. Muscle growth and strength does not kick in until testosterone kicks in. That's a big difference. That's why that teenage years when they can't walk and chew gum at the same time is frustrating. And then the nerves and the muscles have to take time to line up. There's a lot of stuff going on. What am I saying? Be patient. Be patient. Teach mechanics. Over and over and over again. Youth league, 8, 9, 10 year olds, 11, 12, 13 year olds. Every day we do mechanics. Keep the glove, take a bite out of the burger. Glove, we call it keep the glove in the box. Okay? He mentioned Tom's website. There's a lot of drills on there that were mentioned here today. You can get them offline on video. So there's some great stuff out there. Okay?
Okay, and I think through the theme of this whole conference for the 3 days, we've heard a lot about teaching throwing, the mechanics. Stay with it. So I think that's been a huge theme here. That's a theme all over the world. The more you do that, the better throwers you get, the better pitchers you're going to have eventually. All right, next question.
Yeah, just my question is a little bit kind of a continuation maybe of what Pete, we were talking about this afternoon, in the sense that as coaches, we come to these events to learn, to gain knowledge, skills, and build the game. What I've noticed over the years sometimes is us as coaches have a different perspective of either our team or our players than the parents do. It's very easy to have parents on your side when you're 9-0 and undefeated and everybody's winning. But when you're following the steps that you've learned and you're 0-3, 0-6, 0-9, I've witnessed some very amazing coaches come against parent groups. As a coach, through your experience, where do you draw the line and how do you approach these parents? Because sometimes it can be coaching suicide if you take on a parent group who has an ultimate goal of what they believe.
Boy, this is something that occurs everywhere around the world. No matter if you're Japanese, Italian, or French, or didn't matter, American. Pete Wilkinson's going to tackle this first.
Welcome to my world. I've been a Little League coach. I clearly have an academy, so I tend to be often seen in the States as an enemy of the high school coach. But I've been a high school coach, so I've been seen by the select people as being the enemy of select baseball. I have a select team. I coach college and professional athletes. So I've been literally around the world on this one. I'm sure these other guys will have some things to say as well. But parents mean well, by and large. There are exceptions. They mean well. They understand little. I've been one of those people who's had very few parent problems, which is insane because I've been in all those levels. And the reason I believe that is, and the reason that I've been told that it is that on day one we all meet. Kids' parents be in the same room. And I outline the objectives of the program. And I'm sure you've been asked, as I've been asked, are you a development program or are you a competitive program? And frankly, the best development program in the United States and Canada is Major League Baseball. if you're on a Major League Baseball team, that's where the most development happens. That's where the people are who are professionals at it, who that's the level they arrive at. They're not down in A ball, and they're not even in college baseball. The best development program, I've been told by every major leaguer who also went to college, was in Major League Baseball. Not double A, not A, not college, not high school. College is mixed, the rest of them are mixed. But in Major League Baseball, the best people that each organization has are at the major league level. So that's one answer. The other answer is to the question, are you a development team or a competitive team? If you really develop kids, eventually they'll turn competitive. If you develop the competitor in them as well, they'll turn not only competitive, but that will also help their development. I don't think you can separate development from competition. But parents separate based on wins and losses. And so if you're going to do a good job with parents, you have to be really good at the outset at articulating what your emphasis is going to be with regard to development and how that's going to impact their competitive life. Because ultimately, in democracies like ours, winning is important. But at the expense of development, you can't have it in the long run unless you fix your schedule to accommodate it. I'm stronger than they are athletically, and I can do that forever. So if you pick your opponent carefully, you can win a lot without doing the other. But if you want to be play on a level playing field, you'd better develop people, because people like me, people like these guys are out there doing that. And ultimately, development trumps everything. But you have to be developers of people who then build capability and winning. And that's important in society. So that's my answer.
Okay, next, Coach.
In a less theoretical way, I've always made parents, especially the most vocal critics, do work for me. Actually sit in the stands. I give them charts to do. And once you see, as a coach, I'm worried about 15 players. As a parent, they're only worried about one. And that's the blinders. So I try to make some of these parents, and it doesn't work all the time. This is not 100% foolproof. But I give them jobs where they have to actually look at the game from a different perspective to see how, and most of the time they'll find out that their son is maybe not as good as this other boy or the kid is playing in front of them. And I also go back to what you mentioned, Pete, earlier about having your early meeting with players. I think the players and coaches and parents, I think you have to meet with them before you start and let them know what their roles are. What I tell my parents what they can expect out of me and what myself and my staff are going to do. I also tell them what I expect out of the player, out of their sons and daughters, if you're coaching girls. All right, I tell them this is what I expect of them. And I also tell them what I expect from them and try to really build up the idea of team. A team is more important than individual. And so most of the time it works, but there's always going to be those people that are very going to listen to them. But I really think practically just give them something to do. Give them something that makes them see some things from a different perspective.
Coach Ayers?
Establishing a rapport with the parents before the season starts. I've given this before. No rapport, no relationship prior to it. Where do you expect the relationship's going to go? If you have a professional, and I'm not talking about a friend relationship, but you have a professional relationship between the coach and the parents, and an atmosphere in which you can exchange thoughts and discussion in a positive way, you will stop a lot. Most of the parents know at our school that we know what we're doing. We're very fortunate we don't have a lot of that going on. We do have some, and when it happens, it's usually pretty bad, quite frankly, because they're not trying to be reasonable. Hard to argue with somebody who insists upon being an idiot. It's just, they'll drag you down to their level, and then beat you up with their experience of being an idiot. And then we wonder why we can't win that idiot contest. Well, quit trying. Just recognize you're dealing with an idiot. They're not gonna stop. But saying a lot more positively, establish a rapport. Most of the coaches in high school do not have a rapport with parents. Quite frankly, they're afraid of you because they think every one of you is going to turn on them. And I don't believe that's working. Einstein said it best. Repeat the same experiment, get the same results. What did you expect? Change the experiment. So one of my jobs as the assistant coach is my job is to reach out to the parents, bring them into the group, talk about the North Star Way, talk about what we do, talk about opening lines of communications. And 95% of the time it works. Yeah, we got 5% that doesn't work. Okay. I'll take those odds. That's pretty good. But, you know, it's still tough.
So think about what winning is for your team at this moment in time. Not every team's going to be competitive. Not every team's going to be a winner, okay? You have to use quality at bats and focus on winning every inning. Because if you focus on winning every inning, by the end of the game, if you've won more than 50% of those innings, you're probably going to win the game. And that gives kids a chance, even if they're getting smoked, even if you're losing 10-0, each inning is 0-0. So it sets them off to be competitive for every out. And that's an easy way that you can tell the parents, we're not worried about the score, we're worrying about winning each individual inning. For quality at bats, that's maybe seeing six or more pitches, a walk, a hard hit ball, helping your team out with a hit and run or a bunt, celebrating successes in that way, running the bases hard, celebrating every little victory possible that you can.
All right, I'm gonna throw this at you. Just quickly, you're all volunteers. Honesty is always the best policy. Maybe you might want to try this. When you have your first team meeting, be honest with the parents. Okay? The honesty is this, and if it fits your situation, if it doesn't, you have to change the situation or what you're going to tell them. What I would tell them is, listen, you know, our coaches, we are volunteers, but we're going to do our best to work with every kid here on the ball club, make them the best they can be. But understand the game of baseball. If we only practice once a week, that's the only time I have to practice with them. We're talking about a lot of different skills, throwing, hitting, fielding, a lot of complicated skills. So now you're going to put the onus on the parents a little bit and the players during that team meeting. You're going to let them know that you're going to set the foundation, but they are part of the program. And if you want your kids to be better and be a little bit more successful in games, then you're going to have to spend some time with them to play catch with them every day. And they love their kids. They don't want to see their kids fail. So if they can play 5 minutes a day catch, if they can throw some wiffle balls in the backyard to them, whatever they can do, it doesn't have to be an hour, but 5 minutes a day, 10 minutes a day, it's going to make them a little better. Then you put the onus on the player. If you don't like failing in ball games a lot, then you're going to have to do something about that. You're going to have to practice a little on your own. What does that mean? Throw the ball against the wall and work on ground balls. Well, I'm not doing real good on my backhand. Well, then work on backhands. Well, my hitting's not good. Fine, swing the bat 20 times a day and hold your freeze and hold. You don't have to do it 100 times, but put the onus on them a little bit because, you know, as a volunteer, you're going to do your best, but it's not your total responsibility to make that they're going to be better players in ball games. It's their responsibility. They need to be part of the program, okay? All right, another question.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for coming to Vancouver. This question is, for some reason, soccer and hockey in Vancouver gets all the love, and you see a lot of good dads that have ability to coach, but they're not willing to coach with us. And what I find in our association, we're not all about winning, we're all about development and having fun and stuff like that. But you have a lot of dads that don't step up. And, you know, and I always believe that coaching is the reason why the kids come to your association. If they know that it's good coaching, they're gonna come. And for some reason, you know, we haven't spent a lot of time in development on our coaching. And I said, well, how do we get these dads that are coaching soccer and hockey? And what would you say to them? And you know, you started a lot of programs from scratch, from nothing, and made them into something. What would you say to the parents that are bringing their kids to help out more, to get better coaching at let's say, the lower levels, the A level, you know, whether it's from the 13, 8-year-olds, the 10-year-olds, the 14-year-olds?
All right, who wants to tackle that question?
Well, we're doing it right now. Did it this weekend. We've got a clinic for for coaches to help. None of them are here. How many of them were invited? Were invited and showed up zero? Well, don't repeat that experiment. Okay, well, two or three is better than zero, but I think we got to do a better job of marketing. I think we got to do a better job of selling what our game is all about. It's a life skill game, really, isn't it? Baseball mimics life. You win, lose, you get bumps, bruises, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I'm not saying that the other sports don't, but we got to do a better job of marketing and clinics, and we got to have, I would strongly suggest, a manual, a coaching manual, drills and skill book for every level. A little bitty dudes, a little bit up from that, a little bit up from that, a little bit up from that. Do we have one? Oh, if I had one? Well,
hang in there. We're going to get some resources on that. Let's stay with the question, and then we'll get that answer.
Well, and it's a lot of times nobody wants to stand up in front of anybody and make a fool out of themselves because they don't know what they're doing. Nobody wants to do that. So maybe they just aren't assured of the knowledge of coaching baseball, where they're okay with, I couldn't coach hockey. You could put out 100,000 flyers, and I can't coach hockey. And you're going to look at me like, seriously?
Pete Wilkins is going to take this question also. Let me just throw it before, as he gets the mic, throw in something that happens in a lot of different countries. You know, not all coaches volunteers can attend seminars a lot of times. There's different reasons. Sometimes individual clubs take responsibilities also, and they gather that information by sending coaches to conferences, bring it back, and then they have their own coaching program within, you know, weeks. I've talked to a couple here in Vancouver area that do that, where every week the coaches get together because maybe they couldn't make one and they share information, and you start that process, and then I'll let Coach Wilkinson go.
There are about five questions in your comments that let's deal with the development process, and I'll try to be brief and hopefully meaningful. We can devote a lot of time to worrying about why people decide not to participate in the development of kids in one way or another. I have found it through my lifetime more productive to do the best job that we can do to get the people who do decide to become involved armed with information that will help develop kids and continue to keep them excited and the hope that the kid generation has it rub off on them, that their parents or their coaches were engaged enough in their own development that they pay them back by becoming involved. I know that in our academy and with our teams, kids have volunteered by the droves, and some have taken on sports as a profession and that sort of stuff. And so I've been very fortunate in that. But I think ultimately, the volunteer coach who takes a great interest in the real development of his kids encourages that kid, wherever he may live down the road, to get involved in stuff, whether that be baseball or something one of his children is doing that's outside of baseball or whatever that is. How that happens is a matter of the relationship that coaches have with their kids as much as anything. And kids want to give back what they got. That happens a lot, and frankly, more than I think you would even know because you're involved in the day-to-day stuff. We've been together and separately almost everywhere at one time or another in our careers, our professions, and our lives, where the state of volunteerism is pretty healthy. And so I tend to look at the glasses half full, and if we're going to keep it that way, then we have to, as a group, have a tremendous impact on the individual kids that we deal with. And so if we do our best job at that, and there are other things that can be done to market it. But for a person who doesn't want to be engaged, I'd rather you not be engaged, because his heart will never be in it enough to affect the heart of a kid. And we need to affect their hearts.
Great job. Next, anybody else? No?
Real quick. What happened? Oh, real quickly. Talking about engagement, something I did a couple years ago, and we do it every once in a while. It's kind of sporadic right now. I do a thing on Saturday mornings, breakfast of champions. Get any coach who wants to come, we go to breakfast. I announce it, send out an email. How far are the coaches in your league, you know, from a central location? 10 to 15 minutes. Well, everybody, yeah, people go to breakfast on Saturday mornings. Maybe it's Sunday. Well, you can't do Sunday morning, you got church. But Saturday mornings, hey, say, coach, we're going to have an informal. You come to breakfast. And maybe have maybe if you can find a short little, maybe a piece that somebody wrote about something, some technique or something, and just start talking about baseball stuff at this meeting, getting people engaged. And that's what we do with our Breakfast of Champions. We just talk about, we'll throw out things about drills, what works for you, what have you done, what works for you. We share stuff. And it's just a way of getting people engaged and involved. I get a lot of young coaches who are just starting out, and they want to come because they know that a lot of the old folkies like myself get there, you know, and we share ideas. Just a way of getting engagement involved.
All right, you're listening to Baseball Outside the Box in Vancouver, Canada, at the BC Baseball Coaches Conference. We're going to go on. This is Pete Caliendo, your host. We're going on to the next question. We've had some awesome questions here. Keep it up.
Hey, guys. I just want to thank you again for being here this weekend and, you know, sharing your knowledge and wisdom and tips and tricks. It's great. My question is more along the lines of the mental game. You get guys who get down on themselves, and you've been talking about one pitch at a time, one moment at a time. Something goes wrong, you make an error, you strike out, go back to the dugout, flush it, right? That's great. What do you do? How can you help the kid who's in that mental rut, in that funk, and just can't get them out of it?
So, you know, we've got 10 minutes left to the show. Coach O'Connell?
Get any paper out.
I always try to get, it's, stay positive. You gotta stay positive. And that sounds like a broken record, but yes, stay positive. And there are kids who just won't let it go. I mean, it takes some time with them, because maybe they're getting a lot of pressure at home. We don't know what those pressures are. That's why I like to find out the life stories of kids. We don't know what those pressures are, whose dad is really on their back, or whose dad really is forcing them to be more, or trying to get them to be more competitive. And that might be why they're so down on themselves when bad things happen. I just try to stay positive and try to deflect the attention of what just happened to something else, sometimes telling a joke or sometimes doing something that's just going to try to get their mind off of stuff. It doesn't work with everybody, because sometimes there's just so much going on in their heads they can't release it. But that's why it's a daily, all those things I talked about, it's a daily thing with all our coaches that we talk about, staying in the present, you know, working on the process and not worrying about what happened before. It's just a daily thing, every day or every time in practice, I bring up some little tidbit or something that deals with that. So hopefully it's being ingrained in everybody's head, and we don't have that person just won't let go, that won't flush it, that won't take it off his hat. That era. All right.
I work with kids who, without exception, have high expectations. It's just the life I chose. So I run into this with everyone. And what has worked for me consistently has been to go deeper to find out why. What is it? For some kids, it's not having an answer to their problem. This happens to me all the time. Now, all the time is a relative thing, but when they say all the time, it's all they can remember. For one kid that I deal with now, it was, I have no practical tool to defeat the problem I have in at-bats. And so I keep repeating it, and I feel powerless to fix it. And I get tied up in terms of communicating with coach, whether that's me or somebody else. And so to get to the root of that, we can start dealing with, okay, you've got a back problems. These are three things you can do process-wise, pitch to pitch, to take care of business. For somebody else, it just hates to fail. So how important really is this if we're talking about what your goals are long-term? And what are the best in the business doing in terms of either failing to win or failing to succeed at bat to at bat, hitter to hitter, whatever their job is. And so taking their role, what is it that drives you crazy and how else might you think of looking at it? And so I ask a million questions until they work their way through it. Now that may be in one session or over a 2-year period. And for one kid, it's been a 2-year period. For another kid, it was he found a clue in 15 minutes and took care of business. But you gotta find out why, and they gotta tell you. And until they wrestle with the process, they're not gonna get there by themselves.
I saw Coach Ayers there, he was thinking, all of a sudden his finger went up, I knew he was
you saw that by just constantly bombarding them with questions. Quit giving them answers, ask them questions. How do you feel? Why do you feel that way? What happens after you do this? Why? Quickly. Okay, let them solve it, because they probably have the answer. Just keep pounding them on it, and don't quit. When things go wrong, what do you go back to? Fundamentals. Fundamentals. The answer is always the same. You having problems with fielding ground balls? Field more ground balls. You know, and just keep asking them the questions. Why? Why do you feel that way? What's causing you to feel that way? Let them solve their problems.
Okay, last coach is going to answer, and then we got two questions, and then we got to close it up. We've been told we are getting close to the time. Joe Germain.
So from a young age, start focusing on effort over outcome. We want to create an environment where it's okay to fail as long as you try your best and do what is asked of you. And then it's talking about body language. Show them what it feels to feel meek and unconfident, okay? And then show them what it feels to walk around with confidence, with their chest puffed out, and really feel like they're a champion. And that goes along with affirmations and visualization. Thinking about doing it in your mind over and over in practice scenarios, putting them in a situation when they're hitting or fielding two outs, bottom of the ninth, winning run on second. And you gotta make the player get that hit, because when it happens, they will have done it thousands of times before in their mind.
Fantastic, and as Jeff Kroeschel says, fantastic, and we're gonna go on to the next question. That's an inside. So don't worry about it, guys. You don't have to laugh.
Thank you for taking my question. Heard lots of focus this weekend on pitching. My question is about catchers. What age do you feel it's a good time to start focusing on proper catching technique and catcher development?
Joe?
So basically, when we think of catchers, we think of people that are always squatting, okay? Make sure they're in the most athletic position possible. Don't even bother practice blocking. Practice going down and getting back up. Because if you block the ball and you're not back on your feet, you can't make the play. Plus, if the pitch isn't even close, you can't expect that kid to be a good blocker. And then use the universal footwork, because we always want to do right foot, left foot throw and gain ground towards second base. There's no real age to do it. If you're teaching that kind of stuff with getting up and getting down, and then the proper footwork and getting rid of the ball in three seconds or 4 seconds or less, then it'll naturally come. It's about putting them in a task where they need to get the outcome, and we don't necessarily have to coach them to that outcome.
Internet, Brian Cianco, Dodger assistant coordinator of catching. Awesome stuff. Okay, I would start at 8, 10, whatever, when they start playing. They'll find out whether they, you know, some kids don't like catching because they don't like the gear. Some kids love catching because they love the gear. I don't know. But Ryan Cianco is a good source of catching technique, catching drills, the best guy I know on catching, quite frankly.
You just want a guy with the right attitude to be a catcher. And it doesn't matter what age that is. You can tell as you look at your team. There's some kids that are never going to be catchers. You've got to have that. It's got to be. It's got to be somebody who wants to be a leader, and you can tell who the leaders are. And just pick that kid and, you know, start working with him. And I'll echo what was said earlier. Rep mechanics are very important.
Bottom line for me is what the kid wants to. And if that's at 3 years old, or 5 years old, or 7 years old, or 17 years old, when he wants to, he'll work at it. Otherwise, we're working at it harder than he is, and that's never, never, never successful. Suggest catching if that's a position that seems to fit him if you're coaching him. If he's your kid, you have to deal with the relationship you have. If he's your kid as a coach and you'd like him to catch, you may have some selling to do. But if you don't have selling to do, wiring starts at 2 years old and goes until testosterone sets in at a rapid pace. And so the more repetition they can get while they're getting wired, the better for their own participation in it. So there's no age too early to start, really. Then you just have to take care of their bodies and particularly their legs and hips.
My reference to Jeff Rochelle, I want to mention, go to crushperformance.com. Again, another great resource we gave the coaches. All right, final one. We're going to go with Tom O'Connell.
Okay, I'm going to ask you a question, but I'm going to ask my cohorts up here the same question. And it was a question I got in a hot stove at a clinic that I was doing in Antwerp, Belgium, in November. And it was asked, we had coaches from 17 countries there. 17 different European nations, they all came with the European Baseball Coaches Association. And a coach from Great Britain asked this question of all of us, the panel at our hot stove. If you had a billboard, if you owned your own billboard, and you could put one word on it that stood for your philosophy or your attitude or whatever it would be, what would that one word be? And I want you to think about this as coaches. What is the one word that stands for you? And it has to be something that basically everybody in your community is going to know. And for me, I'll give my answer first. If I had a billboard, and I thought about this a lot, I'd say integrity. That's the one word I'd put on that billboard. That would be me, integrity. I want everybody to know that what we do is going to be right for their kids, right for their community, and always right. We're going to always take the right way to do things. What's going to be on your billboard, Terry, or Pete?
Honor. Same, almost identical. Don't give up. Never give up.
Compete against yourself, compete against the other team, and compete in every situation where you have an opportunity to get better.
Pete?
Leadership. The world's in dire need of it, and we need to help provide it and help develop the future leaders, or we're all in trouble. In any case, that's the thing that we focus on.
All right, folks, thank you very much. Thank you to the audience. You guys have been fantastic coaches. Thanks to our special guest. Give yourself a hand. Fantastic conference. We're here at BC Baseball Coaches Conference. Thank you, everybody. This is Baseball Outside the Box. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo, and we will see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.